Honourable members, our guest, from PetroSA, or Petroza, as some people refer to you, Petroza, someone was asking me, geez, I see you've got Petroza there, is that a... Are you now being addressed by individuals with the name of Petroza? I said, no, it's Petro S.A. The Central Energy Fund, there's a full delegation to the members of the Select Committee and of the National Council of Provinces, to everybody, see that we are not meeting CEF and Petro SA so regularly. Some people are quite new and some people are old hands, and everybody are looking at who's who, and you know, we don't want to hear this thing tomorrow that a reliable source has said that this has happened at a meeting of an informed source, or this was said Baba Mtwango. We don't want that. So we're going to start the round of introduction, introduce ourselves, just the name, surname, what position you hold, which company, the members, just the name, surname, from which province they come to, the age, the ID number, the status, whether you're married, divorced, or single, or looking for someone. That will be done at a later stage offline. That can be done offline. Just a short introduction, and then we'll start with our presentation. My name is Freddy Adams. I'm from the Western Cape, the Republic of the Western Cape. Let me go to my right. Sorry?
What else did you say you must say?
What else? Yeah. I'm a permanent delegate. I'm not going to give. Or do you want me to say I'm from the province where the wrong government is? That. Okay. All right. Let me start from my right.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Babe Evans, and I'm from Gauteng. And Honourable Adams, welcome. Yeah, happy to be staying in Cape Town, the best province. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Elsa van Lingen, and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, everybody. My name is Jomo Nyambi. I'm from Mpumalanga Province.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mapole Maina. I'm from the Northwest.
Morning, Bafuna Limguni, Free State.
Morning, Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Masoko Dikhale, Limpopo Province.
San Bonani, Utumzan, Oga Kamede, Opuma KwaZulu Natal.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher, and I'm from 7-8.
Hi, I'm Martin Nicol. I work for the Research Unit in Parliament.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ruboyo Waisha from TNG.
Good morning, Edwin Conroy, ANC Research Unit. The important people, that's to my left now, our VVIPs today.
Good morning. My name is Sizwe Mncwango. I'm from KwaZulu-Natal. I head up the company Central Energy Fund as the CEO.
Good morning, I'm Chris Cooper, I'm the corporate planner at the CEF Group.
Good morning, my name is Gordon Sweto, I'm with Petro SA, I head corporate strategy there.
Good morning, my name is Kailos Kakane, I'm from one of the subsidiaries of CEF, a company called African Exploration Mining and Finance Corporation, AEMFC for short.
Hello, Good morning. I'm Lontanta Dick. I'm the acting CFO at CIF.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Taban Kanyile. I'm the acting head of internal audit at CIF.
Good morning, my name is Mike DePontis, Technical Executive at CIF.
Good morning, I'm Tavi Somane from PetroSA, Operations Manager.
Good morning, Mabatu Matiwane, Transformation BE Manager from Gauteng. I work for PetroSA.
Good morning, I'm Ikumile Gada and I work for PetroSA.
Sanbona, Bonga Zungu. From KwaZulu Natal, PetroSA Stakeholder Relations.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Nombi Nematomela from ESCOM Parliamentary Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Lloyd Kanta. I work from the Department of Energy.
Good morning. My name is Nosipho Odini Zulu, the Committee Secretary.
Morning, I'm Lutu Masishuk. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Okay, now we know who's everyone. Just an apology for our committee researcher. He's sick in bed. You know the weather in Cape Town. If you're not used to this weather, we blame the DA for the cold, extraordinary cold in that regard. But ladies and gentlemen, Madam Dick, you are quite an important person. We want you to relax. You're the man, the person with Imali. Imali. So relax. We're going to have a very fruitful engagement. And so don't be nervous. Don't stress. Just relax. And so that we can get through the program. Honorable members, we're going to allow the presentation to go ahead. Mr. Mkwango, who's going to lead us into, will you lead us into the presentation? Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, observers, friends, colleagues, all protocols observed. Our objective, Chair, this morning, as per your request, is to share with you and the honorable members the corporate plans of our organization, the Central Energy Fund Group, specifically for the period 2013-2014 and beyond. You'll need to share that the group is now made up of only six subsidiaries or six entities or six functional structures going forward under our full control and stewardship. Various executives here, some of them have introduced themselves, will be articulating their corporate plans within each one of these entities. Chair, we've come a long way over the last 18 to 24 months as a group. The group took very bold and radical steps in restructuring itself during this period. We've gone on, Chair, to consolidate some of our smaller entities, smaller subsidiaries, into larger subsidiaries. For example, the company iGas, you might have heard about it, is going into PetroSA in the foreseeable future. And the Oil Pollution Control of South Africa, another smaller of the entities, is on its way to be fully incorporated into the Strategic Fuel Fund. We've also given some of our entities more autonomy and more space to deliver their own respective mandates
You'll notice that we won't be talking today about Sanedi. Sanedi is now on its own and reports directly to the Department of Energy. African Exploration, while they are here with us today, will be moving to the Department of Mineral Resources in the foreseeable future as well. So in the next year or two, Chair, through these efforts and through these initiatives, you'll see a much leaner and a more focused staff group. The presentation that you'll see today is beginning to point towards that direction, that the staff group wants to be a more focused group, want to be a more leaner group, and focus more on execution. So our efforts as a collective, as we move into the new structure, into the new SEF, are becoming more and more harmonized. This will go a long way, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, in ensuring that the holding company is able to provide the right, the correct, and the enabling support for the entities to deliver. Let me also say that this structure is empowering the holding company even more in giving assurance to our shareholder, the DOE. This more focused structure is also enabling us to give more assurance to the broader stakeholders, like this committee chair, for example, as well as the PEC, amongst others. You'll be hearing from individual entities, Chair. You'll be hearing presentations from the following entities, from the CEF holding company, as well as from the Clean Energy Division. Those two presentations will be done by Dr. Chris Cooper. You'll hear a presentation from the Petroleum Oil and Gas Corporation of South Africa, Petrosa, PetroSA, and Mr. Sueto will lead us through that. Both the Strategic Fuel Fund as well as the Petroleum Agency of South Africa will be articulated by Dr. Mike DePontes. African Exploration, Mr. Skakane will do that. And last but not least, as we wrap up, I'll conclude by also touching on one or two slides around the Supplier Development Agency of South Africa, SASDA. We have provided, Chair, the committee with a large volume of material, a large volume of slides, primarily just to be transparent with the committee. We will not be going through each and every one of those individual slides. We have planned a few, but you can be able to track where we are by looking at the bottom right corner and track the number of the slides, which will give you exactly where we are in terms of our presentation. So going straight to slide number two, Chair, let me talk a bit around our organization, around why we exist. We have a very strong commercial mandate as a group to finance and promote the acquisition, exploitation, manufacture, and marketing of energy. We believe that a resolute delivery of this mandate is our license in fulfilling our goals of development that the country so desire. So in the main, the group is about delivering good returns and good commercial value for the country, so that through that value and through those returns, we are able to ensure that general fiscus is provided with taxes, and we continue to support the greater development and create an enabling environment for all the programs that the government desires to deliver for the greater communities as per the mandate of this country. Our vision is to be the leader in Africa in energy. You will see through our presentation that we are very strong in fossil fuels, in hydrocarbons. We've got strong entities like African Exploration, Petrosa, and many more. And we want to be the leader in Africa in energy. you've taken a stance that you'll go into cleaner energy and renewable energy resources to be able to dominate and share in the 20 gigawatt of solar or clean energy that the government is putting through in the National Development Plan Vision 2030. So, just at a high level, Chair, we exist to develop commercial value and promote the energy space in South Africa so that through that commercial value, we are able to give more returns for the greater development of other initiatives that the government desires. At a very high level, a group of companies that will be presenting today, the Clean Energy Division, which includes the solar park and other clean energy initiatives. You'll see the Strategic Fuel Fund. You'll see PetroSA. You'll see Petroleum Agency, SASA, as well as African Exploration. That is my introduction, Chair, and I'll hand you over to Dr. Cooper, who will take us through the clean energy, who will take us through SEF holding company, including our objectives, as well as the Clean Energy Division. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. I thought it appropriate to just to start off by listing the entities within the SEF group and their prime areas of focus so that you get a mind map of what the group, this group is about. SEF itself essentially is the holding company and oversees matters pertaining to the group. Within SEF we have the Clean Energy Division, which looks at renewable energy. As part of their brief, they also manage the subsidiary ITA Energy, which has a focus on solar water heaters. PetroSA, as has been mentioned, is into oil and gas and can be considered to be the national oil company. SFF is a strategic entity that maintains strategic infrastructure related to crude oil and also strategic crude oil stocks. The Petroleum Agency does licensing of oil and gas exploration and maintains a database of all of the geological and seismic information that we have around the country, primarily offshore. African Exploration is into mining and particularly coal at this stage, but also we'll look at further strategic minerals. And then finally, the SASDA, the South African Supply Development Agency, is there to develop previously disadvantaged individuals and companies to help them support the oil sector. Over the past 2 years or so, the group has held a number of strategic workshops to fully unpack the mandate and also identify what it is that is required of the group. And what was quite critical there was that we were able to clearly define the strategic intent for the group. I'm going to skip a slide because it shows a little more detail than is necessary here. But from that exercise, we can define that SEF has a single primary purpose, and that is to contribute to national security of energy supply. And that drives all of our operations and thinking. That process that we went through led to a review of the organization, as you have seen, and we are in the process not only of reducing the number of subsidiaries, consolidating them, but also SEF itself is playing a more important role as the holding company. The strategic objectives were set, and I believe that these are going to be the key drivers for the group for the next few years. And we have five strategic objectives. The first one, to contribute to national security of energy supply, which is going to be critical if we wish to deliver on the National Development Plan. Safety, health, the environment and quality is a priority for our group. I think It's well known that the energy sector is a major contributor to environmental impacts, and we attempt to minimize those as much as we can. We obviously have to build financial sustainability for the group. The energy sector is characterized by very large projects that take an immense amount of capital and have long lead times, and so we need to take that into account in our planning, so that we do in fact that we are financially sustainable. It's important for us to build and maintain an appropriate human capital base. Again, that fits in with the NDP, where we need to upskill the citizens of this country. And then finally, we have to ensure that there is effective group oversight. The following slides go into a little more detail into each of those objectives. I don't think it's necessary for me to address all of them, but it will give you a feel for the next level down of each of those objectives. So, for example, we are providing volumes and quality of defined energy products, particularly liquid products. We're maintaining and probably going to need to expand infrastructure on the strategic side. We are moving to new sources of energy and also into energy efficiency. So you can see this on the security supply, we're operating in a number of areas. Safety, health, environment, and quality. The environment we operate in places is dangerous, and we need to ensure that the safety of our employees is paramount, and that is a key performance indicator for us within the group. We obviously cannot ignore the environmental climate change obligations that we have, and that is also driving the focus on clean energy and renewable energy and energy efficiency. The old OPC, oil pollution control, obviously is part of that, where we maintain a pristine environment in the Saldanha Bay area as far as oil is concerned. Financial sustainability, I think it's important to understand that our resources are not unlimited. Projects are indeed unlimited, and there needs to be a balance between that, and we're focusing on how we can best manage the resources that we have. Human capital, continuing training and education of staff is important to us. We have had to relook at our human capital strategy across the group. Previously it was really focused on individual entities, and we've taken the view that it's important for us to understand that across the group. Transformation targets are important for us as well, as is succession planning and retention of skills. The energy sector does require specialist skills, and we need to both train those and also maintain those that we have, retain them as well. Oversight really is a governance function for the group, that we need to ensure that this group operates effectively. Since we have spoken a little bit about the approach, this graphic sets it out in a little more detail. We first of all have to stabilize this group. I think you are probably well aware of the uncertain state that we were in. We need to stabilize that, and then from that will follow a growth period. And we've got the number of stages. There's some basics, the typical housekeeping, cleaning out everything that we don't need, making sure that our systems are efficient and effective and operate properly. The fossil energy side is really where the CIF group comes from, and it is still a key component of the group, and that is on the strategic crude side through SFF, contribution to our liquid fuel demand through PetroSA, coal, which is being fed at this stage to Eskom to ensure that they can keep some of the lights on at least. And then we have some growth projects, the FO project and a number of other projects that PetroSA will address. On renewables, primarily solar at this stage, although we're also involved with a landfill gas project, and there is an effort to identify where we need to move into the future. with renewable energy projects. You asked for our budget. The next three slides present, in the first instance, our income statement. I'm not an accountant. These are just numbers to me. But you will, our CFO is here, she can address that in detail should you have questions on the income statement. The balance sheet, the first one gives a list of the assets. And the second one, the liabilities. The numbers look big, but in the energy space, they're not that big. If we consider that to drill one offshore well probably costs in the region of $130 million, and you've got no guarantee that you're going to strike oil or gas, then you will understand the capital involved within this sector. I mean, that's more than R1 billion, just for one hole in the ground. So the numbers are big within the energy sector, and you need to understand that. We have identified some risks. Our human resources, the skill space that we have is a risk. Now, we do have project risks, obviously, and that includes project selection risks. Our financial sustainability risk, obviously, is their leadership is potentially an issue. We need real leadership. And that's right, not only within the group, but I think it goes further than that. Our systems need to be streamlined and improved upon. Oversight risk and reputational risk. Those were the principal risks that we identified across the group. To conclude about CEF, the holding company, we are positioning ourselves to and restructuring so that we can grow. Energy infrastructure contribution to the NDP is an important role for us. We do have challenges, and funding is going to be a challenge as we go into some of the bigger projects. We are in the process of developing and identifying new renewable energy projects that I believe will contribute both to security of supply and also contribute to lessening the environmental impact that we have, particularly with the release of carbon dioxide. And then we are filling key positions so that we can be effective and deliver on our mandate. Chair, that's essentially CEF, the holding company, and the objectives for the CEF group of companies. It's now appropriate to move on to the subsidiaries. And the first subsidiary, if I can call it that, that I need to talk to is the Clean Energy Division, which is a division of CEF, the holding company, and its focus is on clean energy. It includes the company ITA, and on the, I think it was the third slide, is the structure of CEF. You'll also see CCE there. That also falls within the management environment of CED. After that, we will go through PetroSA, SFF, Petroleum Agency, African Exploration, and then SASDA. As I've mentioned, the Clean Energy Division is our operating arm that is responsible for clean, renewable energy, energy efficiency. It has also had to undergo major restructuring in its project portfolio. At one stage, we had a significant number of landfill gas projects that we were unable to continue with, and so we need to redirect our efforts. We are involved with a solar park. At this stage, that's at feasibility stage, where we are doing the environmental impact assessments, geotechnical assessments, and also overarching feasibility study for that. The solar water heater rollout is a challenge for this organization. It's a challenge all round, I think. That's been done by ITA. And what has been lost in translation over the last few years is that it started out specifically to look at high pressure solar water heaters. And the reason for that was the stress that was on Eskom's system. And by replacing geysers in households, in middle to high income households with solar water heaters, that demand could be reduced. focus was not initially on the low pressure solar water heaters, which is where most of the rollout has taken place since. But ITER is re-looking at how they can redefine the model and ensure that we do at least deliver some solar water heaters. We have the objectives of the Clean Energy Division. I think there's four slides that follow. They have a growth objective, and that's to complete the solar park feasibility. The solar water heaters, they'd like to roll out also into the low pressure side. And then energy efficiency in public buildings. I'm grateful to see that your downlighters have now been replaced with LEDs. They are far more efficient than the 50 watt little heaters that you were using previously. And that's where we need to go. The further part of growth is renewable energy generation, and there will be a submission made to the third round of the IPP program. We are looking at photovoltaics and wind technology. Photovoltaics is where you generate electricity directly from sunlight falling onto a diode. We are involved with a potential manufacture of thin film photovoltaics using the technology that was developed at the University of Johannesburg. We are also looking at whether there are opportunities to manufacture wind turbines. Under synthetic fuel, there is a coal seam near Makla, which African Exploration has the rights to, but that particular seam is called torbonite, and there exists the potential to retort that and create a synthetic fuel stream which could then be further refined. And then we will look at opportunities in the biofuels sector. Under cost containment, we need to clean up the Cape Clean Energy CCE project and need to dispose of that project. It is possible that it could be resurrected somewhere else, but that's looking into a crystal ball in the future. And those of us who are involved with forecasting know that he who lives by the crystal ball must learn to eat ground glass. So where that's going to go, I cannot tell you at this stage. The Darling Wind project, the wind turbines at Darling turn sometimes, that needs to be some renegotiation. And we also need to pray for more wind. Under social projects, the BNM bus in Mtienjo Magogo, that is a less polluting way of lighting coal. In fact, you can use it for your briars as well. You don't light it from the bottom, you light it from the top. In fact, it's the same process that Sasol uses to gasify coal. So it's highly technical, but also incredibly simple. And then we are distributing some solar-powered lights into rural communities. We're also tying it in with a youth project to teach the youth about energy and renewable energy and energy efficiency. It also gives them an opportunity to study at night, where currently they would be using candles. They now have some lights. There's a tremendous amount of work that can be done there, and we cannot claim to be covering everything, but in our small way, I believe that we are contributing there. That chair is the end of CIF Holding Company and the Clean Energy Division. I'll now hand over to Mr. Godwin Sweter from PetroSA to take you through an overview of PetroSA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Honorable Chair, PetroSA, we have developed a corporate plan that's fully supportive of government policies. Government policies, including those that are aimed at enhancing the country's security of supply of energy. Government policies, including the National Development Plan. The committee will be aware, Chair, that among the recommendations of the National Development Plan is that we develop offshore gas, which we will continue doing, is something that as PetroSA we've been doing since 1992. It is also recommended that we should carry out exploratory drilling for economically recoverable shale gas reserves. I will talk to the committee chair about our efforts in that regard. There is also a recommendation that we should promote investments in liquefied natural gas. Our corporate plan caters for that. The introduction of clean fuels. We have initiatives that support that recommendation. The recommendation that we should have liquefied natural gas to support, among others, a power generation through combined cycle gas turbines. Our corporate plan does support that. And of course, there is the big issue of a new refining capacity. We have included that in our initiatives. The National Development Plan itself, you recall, Chair, it's about strong economic growth, in fact, with numbers of at least 5% per annum to achieve 11 million jobs by 2030. There's also the drive towards a greener economy, the drive to build a capable state. We believe, Chair, our initiatives do support that. The CEO mentioned earlier self-strategic intent, which is that of driving national energy security. There is also the Department of Energy's quest for the sustainable provision of energy for socio-economic development. Our vision 2020, which is about sustainability, security of supply, and transformation, is 100% aligned with that. The slide that is before the committee is a representation, Chair, of the strategic intent represented here as our contribution as PetroSA towards the supply of liquid fuels to the nation. At this moment in time, in 2013, our contribution is very low, less than 5% of national demand. But our intention is to increase that contribution to at least 25% by the year 2020. At this moment in time, the primary focus within the organization is on increasing production at what remains the main source of revenue, which is the Mossel Bay plant, contributing at least 95% of our revenue. We are operating right now at less than half of design capacity, and our intention is to increase that production level to more commercially sustainable levels through the development of an offshore gas field at which we are currently drilling. That project will take us to at least 2019-2020, but we do recognize that it will not bring us to full capacity, so there is need for other initiatives. And the other initiative that we are pursuing at this moment in time, that's the LNG importation project represented there in, I think this color is orange. Liquefied natural gas, the liquefied natural gas project, we are executing it with support from Eskom. Eskom's interest is in reducing its carbon footprint, because liquefied natural gas is much more greener, much more efficient than the current production base. But our interest is in enhancing production at the gas to liquid refinery, but also creating a market for gas ahead of the coming on stream eventually of shale gas. That project is going ahead. There's significant progress. taking place. But even that chair will not be enough, because it's important as an organization to enhance our own sustainability. We need to minimize reliance on just Mossel Bay as the primary source of income. So there is need for other sources of revenue. And that's where the downstream entry comes in. But it also serves the much more important role of providing PetroSA and indeed the government for the very first time with a significant presence in the liquid fuels market. And this is the project that we're fast-tracking. We believe by early next year we should be in a position to enter the downstream market. But we say even that will not take us to our goal. So Project Mutombo then comes in the early 20s. And we are making progress. We are working flat out together with a company called Sinopec from China, carrying out the technical studies, targeting 2014-2015 for the final investment decision. You will notice, Chair, that there is a small but growing portion, the grey portion, the shale gas. We are saying surely within the next 10 years, South Africa must be in a position at least to get some value from the resource that we know exists in the Karoo. And at this moment in time, we are capacitating ourselves as an organization to fully participate in shale gas exploration. The picture you see, Chair, that's the drilling rig, which is operating offshore Mossel Bay. Right now it's about 5 kilometers, at a depth of 5 kilometers. We still have another 500 meters to go. By the end of this month, we should have reached our target. We aim to start producing within the next few months. I think by the end of this year, gas will be flowing from that field. Our corporate plan also includes growing our presence, consolidating our presence outside South Africa. And that includes Ghana, where we successfully acquired an asset. Well, it's a small percentage, but of a very significant field, one of the largest discoveries in Africa in recent years, a billion barrel field offshore Ghana. And there's good news coming out of that field every passing day. In fact, the latest is that one section of it, which was not yet in production, we have now received the go-ahead to produce from there. So at this point in time, the field is producing at 110,000 barrels, and the field that has just been approved by the Ghanaian authorities will increase that production by another 80,000 barrels per day, and the asset is profitable, which is good news. We also have a presence, Chair, in Equatorial Guinea. That's an exploration block where we currently have 100% equity, but this is a high-risk block, but with a lot of potential. So what we want to do right now is to farm out a certain percentage of it to a partner that will enhance the we will reduce the financial exposure, the technical risk associated with that block, but while maintaining a significant presence, because we do believe it's a block with a lot of potential. We have left out a couple of slides, mainly in the area of Mutombo, but we can always come back should there be any additional questions. In short, the 2013-17 corporate plan focuses on sustainability, that's sustainability of gas to liquid refinery, the project equates of FO, the LNG project, while, of course, we're also advancing growth projects like Mutombo and the downstream entry. We operate in a tough environment, but PetroSA is ready for the challenge. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and members, I'll take you through the activities of the Select Fuel Fund, SFF. I think what I'd like to do in the next couple of slides is paint the picture of what is done, where it's done, who it's done by, and what are the future. The first thing to note is that SFF manages the government's crude oil strategic stocks and storage facilities and all assets related to that. We have commercial storage as well. We rent out the tanks in Saldanha for commercial storage. As a result of loading oil into the Saldanha Bay, we have the necessary and interesting activity of oil pollution control. In our Oorgies mines and the old mines where we used to store oil, we have the environmental management. If we move on to what the operational functions are, I've just mentioned the storage of crude oil stocks and managing of the three facilities in Saldanha Bay, in Milnerton, and Oorgies. As a result of this, of course, we need to operate the pump stations to drive the fuel down from Saldanha Bay into the refinery in Chevron. We provide all the oil pollution control services. The growth and challenges are important to look at. The stock holding, when we look at it, is limited to one location. That's the Western Cape, the Saldanha Bay. And that's right next to the refinery, right next to, close by the refinery. One has to look in the future and see how you store oil also close to the other refineries in South Africa for strategic stock. Naturally, that will require some funding. We need to look at that. The changes in legislation are quite interesting. Specifically in the last couple of months, the draft strategic stock petroleum policy and draft strategic stock implementation plan was released by the Department of Energy. We're taking note of that and what challenges that will give us and options for future. There is the worldwide increasing storage requirements of oil. We do have challenges in the operations in Saldanha Bay. The thing to note is the high cargo duties that are required there versus if we compare that to other cargo duties around the world, it's quite high. We have the problem of, as we all know in the winter here, the adverse berthing conditions in Saldanha Bay, nighttime berthing restrictions because of the operation of the harbour. We're always mindful from an environmental aspect, the encroaching human habitation, so we need to manage that completely. The assets that we're talking about here are Saldanha, where we have six tanks. Each of those tanks are huge. 7.5 million barrels of oil can be stored in each tank. In Milnerton, we have 39 tanks, each of 200,000 barrels of crude oil. At the moment, we only have two tanks currently in use for crude oil storage. We're looking at releasing further tanks in the future. Oorgies, this is essentially a service that's provided whereby we make sure that the water levels in the mines are low so that we make sure that there's no external leakage of oil in those containers. So we're maintaining that. The major projects, important to note, I think the current is really operational issues. These are clustering meterings that we're putting between tanks and vessels to make sure that we are accurately measuring the transfer between tanks. The obvious point of the key point standards, we're keeping up with the standards that are required by looking at the CCTV and the installation of CCTV for security. The necessary issue of office refurbishment at the moment in tank farm. All members who moved down there are from SFF, and including oil pollution control, some of the members in Saldanha Bay. We are present engaged in procurement of an oil pollution control vessel that will enable us to work in Saldanha Bay safely and into the future. The planning is very important because there we're looking at refurbishing of further tanks at Milnerton Tank Farm to make it a much more active facility. We're of course upgrading the security systems in Milnerton. We're looking for further land for additional strategic stock tanks. This will become important in the future. Development of additional tanks in Saldanha Bay, we're looking to see if that is financially feasible. And those are essentially our investment projects. I think that ends the SFF. If I may now go on to Petroleum Agency of South Africa, PASA. An important aspect here is to note what PASA does. It has a strategic role and a mandate to contribute to the energy resources of the country And these are key issues: by promoting and regulating exploration and production of the country's natural oil and gas resources. These are all as set out in the Minerals, Petroleum and Resources Development Act, and those are highlighted, if you look in the Act, in promoting, receiving applications for permits, evaluating these permits, monitoring the permits, and making sure that all the information that is gathered is stored correctly. This is seismic information, which becomes very important to the country, and bring to the Minister's notice and attention of anything that she requires on that side. I'd like also to point out in the maps here what has happened over the last 2 years. The coloured areas there has been the exploration blocks that have been taken up in the past 2 years. If we move to the present, an important issue, there's been a sudden excitement in the international community, and many more blocks have been taken up for exploration. I certainly believe a lot of this is as a result of the activity in Mozambique and its renewed interest in South Africa. For example, Mobil Exxon is looking for oil exploration on the offshores of Durban. An important project that hasn't been noted yet, I think in the past it has been, but it's the United Nations project whereby the offshore extension and the marine boundaries of the country are increased. If we look at the map, and if we go around the red area there, somebody's tracing it, thank you very much, Chris, that's the existent boundary. Within that boundary, South Africa owns everything that's on the floor of the ocean. If we look at the, Chris, if you go to Prince Edward Islands, that belongs to South Africa, that's the old boundary. That is a huge amount. If we look on the right-hand side, the mainland area is 1.2 million square kilometers. Within the red boundary that Chris has shown us, the economic zone is adding another 1.5 million square kilometers. Now the United Nations process is extending it to the white boundary. If we go through that from number one, all south, going north now, and if we look at the Prince Edward Islands, going around that solid line, and then go to the dotted line, the Discovery Ridge, that is also being claimed from the United Nations. That adds a further 1.8 million square kilometers. This is a very important piece of work that's being done by the Petroleum Agency. These claims have been lodged at the United Nations. They still need to be defended, and that will take place probably in the next 3 or 4 years. You can imagine every country in the world is doing this, but it gives you a significant increase in the seafloor that belongs to South Africa. This is the plan that the Petroleum Agency had in terms of what happens in the future. We noticed the moratorium decision on the left-hand side at the top, 2012 and 2013. This is in reference to the shale gas moratorium. This has been lifted, and now we need to go into quite an exciting area, which is the licensing round, making sure that the hydraulic fracturing goes ahead in an environmentally safe and organized manner, preceded by the regulations that still need to come out. I noted on the left-hand side at the bottom the submission of the Discovery Ridge addendum. That's that area to the north of the Edward Islands. And, of course, over the next 3 or 4 years, we'll be defending that at the United Nations. That, in essence, is the work that the Petroleum Agency of South Africa has done and will be doing. The current challenges are important for this particular subsidiary of CEF. The future funding, one must be very careful and be able to plan for that. The MPRDA amendment bill will be going through Parliament shortly. That notes very clearly that the designated agency, which used to be PASA, would be then go to the Department of Mineral Resources as well as the Council of Geosciences. And one needs to be very careful how we handle the actual intellectual capacity, the people and their skills, to make sure that these are housed correctly and we don't lose that particular skill within the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mike. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I will present one of the subsidiaries, African Exploration. Firstly, just overall objectives and how those tie in with the National Development Plan. I will go through a pipeline of our projects and a high-level overview of our financials, and end off with what is currently in our pipeline by way of hiving off AE from CEF. African Exploration's overall objective is to be amongst the top five coal producers in South Africa. That demands that we produce and sell close to about 32 million tons of coal, primarily to the electricity generator, Eskom. And therefore, the objectives that we have in the long term, in the medium term, with that goal in mind, inform what funding we require for that type of growth, what skills development strategies do we need to engage in training our own staff to meet that challenge, which also means we would be creating jobs in the process. And it also means we have to do this in a safe and responsible way, which is a key priority. And it also means that our results ought to be profitable with a strong balance sheet, and our cash flow management has to be responsible, which also supports the required funding for growth as well. And that in its own creates a virtuous cycle. How we prioritize also becomes important in order to reach that goal, and our long-term and medium-term strategic objectives also inform our short-term objectives, which are in the next slide. Very briefly, our short-term objectives can be categorized into five areas. Number one and two are key priorities, that of growth and sustainability in a responsible way and in an environmentally friendly way. And therefore, you could say that sales and production in a safe and responsible manner is our key priority. From objective number 3 to 6, that's how we prioritize our projects, and each one of those short-term objectives talk to which projects are our priority. Number 7 talks to what I was indicating earlier on, that profitability for growth and sustainability becomes very important in order for sustainable growth. 8 talks to us actioning the cabinet decision that was made in 2010 to hive off AE from CEF to report directly to the Department of Mineral Resources. Number 9 also talks to growth, and number 10 provides that we follow the provisions of the PFMA and all other laws for corporate governance, including the Companies Act, other guidelines from the King 3, and other risk management principles as well. An overview of our projects. Here, this slide depicts where we are in terms of our current production of coal in the one operation that we have in Ogies, in Mpumalanga. We are at 1.6 million tons of production per annum, mainly supplying Kendal Power Station, which sits just across us. We envisage that from 2015, we would be operational in other areas where we are not mining by way of extending this current resource to ramp up to 3 million tons. That will be further grown by our commissioning of the T project, the number 4 SIM for thermal coal, also for the supply to Eskom, for supplying Eskom. Number 5 SIM is the Tovanite that Chris spoke about earlier on, a project in which we are partnering with our holding company, CEF. And then there are other Mpumalanga prospects that we are looking at. We are, however, even at this stage, already are negotiating with Eskom that on an annual basis from next year, we increase this production to about 3 million, which is almost doubling where we are now. That then just pushes up the volume, the volumes, although it might shorten the life of mine. Our financials in this current year, unaudited, the auditors are at our offices busy doing their work. We are looking at a net income before tax, but after write-offs of about 107.3 million. This is as at the end of March 2013. These results show an increase of sales, yes, from a low base of about 276% to 326.9 million. We've turned around the business from the first year's losses to profit, and our gross profit margins are at 51%. Looking into this year that is upon us now, our margins are lower, slightly lower, to about 46%, mainly caused by the delays in Gosile, which we should be supplying from April 2014, the coal qualities that we have in certain areas, and therefore resulting in lower revenue. Our balance sheet shows an improvement towards solvency. We have to increase our loans in whatever form, whether it's equity or debt, to support further growth. We have a third, on behalf of the country, shareholding in a company called PAMDC, in which we share the shareholding with the country Zambia and Zimbabwe. And their resources are in the Northern Cape and in the Northwest. We need to increase investment in this so that we can fast track the exploration of these assets. And they are mainly iron ore and manganese. Our liquidity ratios are healthy, but however subject to the restructuring of the loan that we have with SEF. Our cash flow statement also shows positive cash flows, however assisted by borrowings. As I mentioned earlier on, there was that decision by Cabinet to hive off AE from SEF to report directly to the DMR. The activities there are as listed, and I've summarized them into six areas. The implementation agent has been appointed. We're in the process of negotiating a restructuring of our loan from SEF and the repayment terms thereof. We would look at searching at a third-party funding, either from development finance institutions or other third parties. We are talking to National Treasury, and that is going well. DMR and DOE negotiations are also in progress and very positive. We have, where necessary, acquired our own support services in things like IT systems, finance personnel, etc. And we've left others where we feel it is not really that urgent to have our own resources there. And then finally, in other areas of power generation, we have other resources, for instance, lithium for battery power, especially for the transport industry. We've got silica sands, exploration efforts there for your photovoltaic screen production for solar power. We have uranium for nuclear energy. And we have, as I mentioned, the resources in the iron and steel value chain, which would be your iron ore, manganese, and anthracite. We also have limestone for your FGT technology that Eskom uses, which ensures that the emissions from coal production per station, from electricity production per power station, is minimized. That would be all about AE. I will hand over to Mr. Mnangagwa to talk to Sasta and wrap up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to my colleagues for such powerful work. Over the next 5 minutes, Chair, I will take you through our last but probably the most important leg of our mandate, a company called SAFDA, South African Supplier Development Agency, whose primary purpose and fundamental reason for being is to uplift smaller suppliers in this country. We've gone through about 5 entities within the group with a clear focus and a clear mandate of generating returns, commercial value, as well as security of energy. Supplier stands for, SASDA stands for the development of those young entrepreneurs who become very key in a state like ours. I mean, if you look at how successful Malaysia and Singapore have been in turning around their economies, it's through entrepreneurship, it's through young people starting up new businesses and being given a leg up to develop and become greater contributors to the economy. What SASDA does, Supplier Development Agency, is to provide mentorship, provide support technically, provide coaching for young budding businesses. It promotes skills development, skills training. We do that by first, you know, assessing those potential suppliers and help them access various tools to become better suppliers and be more competitive into mainstream. Initially, the company was set up by the oil industry, by the SAPIA members about 5 or 6 years ago to help accelerate the delivery of black empowerment and affirmative procurement in the oil space. It is now under the incubation of SEF through a directive from DOE. We provide facilitation for financial support as well as project management. In the environment that we operate in, we've experienced a lot of challenges in ensuring that SASDA continues to do the current things that they are doing without any hindrances. So the company is going through a lot of difficulty in fulfilling this kind of mandate, purely from a financial point of view, from a solvency point of view, and from a liquidity point of view. And if it wasn't for the sole support of SEF, the other parties who started SASDA, the oil industry, the SAPIA guys, are gradually checking out from this initiative. So we are finding it extremely difficult to shoulder all the supplier development issues targeted for the oil industry, to shoulder those just within SEF and SEF alone. So I'll take to share with the members through about 2 or 3 slides, just highlighting the challenges that we are faced with insofar as SASDA is concerned, the crossroads that we are at, and then share that with you. And over the next 4 or 5 months, the team is working out various solutions and options as to how we get out of those crossroads, because the issue of development, the mandate from the shareholder around developing suppliers remains resolute. So we are unshaken about that mandate, and we continue to hold it very dear to our hearts, given what it stands for. The oil companies themselves and energy-related entities are still struggling to embrace the notion of supplier development. We continue to push ahead as SEF because of our beliefs in the notion of supplier development. The small pockets of success by the participating companies has not helped in accelerating empowerment, has not assisted in creating critical mass of black suppliers. The minister went out scathing last year when she announced the 10-year audit results in the oil industry, given the slow progress that we had made as an industry in embracing young, budding, black entrepreneurial suppliers. Notwithstanding the fact that SASDA had exhausted its own resources, its own energy, in trying to develop suppliers that are able to provide very good and critical services into the oil industry. So the development of suppliers in the energy sector remains quite paramount. It remains quite critical in the overall growth of the economy, as you might have seen in a lot of economies that have resuscitated themselves using entrepreneurship and smaller suppliers. I've said earlier, you know, our SASDA has got serious funding challenges. SAF continues to fund SASDA. As at the 31st of March 2013, SAF has spent over the last 3 years close to 55 million rands of its own funds, of its own resources, in funding SASDA and supplier development. Our resources continue to be challenged. As there are no dividend flows from other subsidiaries, we continue to support our 5 or 6 subsidiaries, ensuring that they grow to deliver the commercial mandate. So we are caught between the rock and the hard place as we force along in supporting SASDA, 55 million rands to date, while our inflow from dividends continues to be challenging. I mean, if you look at a company like Petro SA, you saw big slides on their investment programs that SAF needs to support, you know, whether it's Project Ikwezi. You saw Sitelo talking about the T project and other programs that we have to support at AE, and we continue to support SASDA. But we foresee a lot of growth and returns from Petro SA, from AE, whereas SASDA represents to us what is very dear in terms of uplifting others and giving others an opportunity they may not have had in the past. So the issue of funding for SASDA remains a very tough one, as the liabilities of SASDA are far greater than its assets, which also creates a challenge for the directors who might be perceived to be trading recklessly because the company is insolvent. So what have we done as management, and we continue to look at various options going forward to turn the situation around in SASDA. SASDA continues to look at SAF to recapitalize it, averting a possible qualification opinion from the Auditor General. SAF is finding it difficult unless we see a clear turnaround of SASDA. We've engaged SAPIA, the Board of Governors of SAPIA, the founder members of SASDA, and to date we've drawn a blank in terms of receiving support or continued support from the oil multinationals of this country. We've been communicating and engaging the DOE on how we can restructure SASDA so that we continue with the issues of mandate while minimizing the losses or the amount of funding that we need to be delivering to SASDA. So that's where we are, Chair, insofar as SASDA is concerned. And that wraps up what I would call the presentation from the entities within the SAF group. In summary, you've had SAF, the holding company, presenting today, Chair. You've had the Clean Energy Division making their own presentation. Petro SA, very clear direction of where the company is going over the next 5 years, including its projects. Strategic Fuel Fund, Petroleum Agency, from Dr. De Pontes, as well as African Exploration, from Mr. Sikakane. So, Chair, on behalf of the Central Energy Fund Group and this group of companies, it's been an honor and a privilege for us to spend some quality time with you and your members. We thank you profusely from the bottom of our hearts for the time that you've given us this morning to share and articulate our issues as a group. We're a group, as I've highlighted earlier on, going through a restructuring process, but with a very compelling vision to be the leader in Africa in energy. We have a very clear intent, Chair, to provide energy resources for the national energy security of South Africa. We've given you a field, Chair, and an overview of the group, cutting across all of our subsidiaries this morning. And we continue as a group
build capacity, to build capability in order to deliver on our mandate, in order to deliver on our vision, as well as our mission. I thank you, Chair, and your members, for your indulgence, and I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable members, is there anyone from the Department of Energy that wants to add, or from any department, ESCOM or Energy? You're fine. Okay. Honorable members, over to you. Let me see the hands. There are no hands. Oh, Honorable Mguni, Honorable Dikhali, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Abrahams. Honorable Van Lingen. Sinclair. In that order. Honorable Mguni.
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank the presenters for the very informative session. Now I usually say you don't praise a fish for swimming because it has to swim anyway in this life. Chair, I'd like to go to slide number Vision 2020, which in my view it summarizes most of the issues. There was a Vision 2020 key building blocks, where it shows where SEF is and all the other integral parts of SEF, SAVDA, SADA, and all these acronyms. Chairman, in short, that they say they are 85%, if I hear it well, or 25% supply or output. They haven't reached yet the local market demand. So my question is, what's the catch, or what's the hold up that you're not producing at your maximum? We've got a couple of refineries, my sources, should I say my sources? I'm not a journalist, but my sources tell me that actually our refineries are not producing at maximum. Because of the nature in which they were built, and because we are actually importing a lot of already refined crude oil, if it's crude oil, but it's almost about 80-70% refined, because our refineries are actually built for that. And if we want to improve our refineries, it's going to cost us billions of rands, as much as well, you know, embarking on Umthombo project. Because the Mthombo project is what is going to give us a secure supply. Now my question is, why are you approaching it at that level, and other questions? And what's the hold up actually on Mthombo? I can see here that there's this sort of a project management, a plan, that it will come into commission, whatever, after 2020. But at the moment, what is really the hold up of Mthombo? Because in my view, or when I read through it, it seems as if we are just procrastination, postponing unnecessarily the commissioning of Umthombo that is going to give us a secure supply of energy. And then on the issue getting revenue, you've got the green block, which you said is basically for downstream. To generate revenue. Let's just think of the governance of the petroleum industry itself. Let's take countries like Nigeria, where there's a lot of infighting because of oil. Let's take countries like Angola, there's a lot of fighting, but the governance of the oil industry, it's fairly stable because there's no infighting. The resources there, they go to the government, and it sort of meet objectives. And other countries like Malaysia, in a way, you know, there was the call, I've been looking through some documents, or some, not really on the Norwegian model, where you've got the state, which sets policy, you've got the regulator that sets regulation and oversight, and you've got your commercial part of it. Now, when looking at South Africa, you're just talking about PASA. What model are we actually taking? Taking into consideration the political stability, taking into consideration our capacity and expertise that we have. Because you take into Nigeria, you find that there's no political stability and perhaps there's no expertise. That is why there's so much fighting, a lot of patronage as well. Where do we fit in South Africa in this model that we will actually properly manage our national oil company, as Petrosa is actually an OC national oil company? And then coming to further exploration, you've got shale gas there, of which is still a contentious issue that our government or cabinet has given a go-ahead. Does it go ahead and exploring, but there's still a lot of advocacy group. My friend here next to me is one, I think is one of them, that shale gas in the Karoo, you destroy our natural resource, or our water resources, actually. It's key that our natural resource. Now you are already planning that shale gas will come in along those years. Have we done proper feasibility studies on the environmental impact that it will have and the economical exploration and exploitation of the shale gas itself? I think Dr. Zell mentioned that to drill there, of which, of course, it costs billions of rand to drill for gas or for oil along the coast, of which it might be just down the drain, because we are not sure if you look at the oil there. We've been exploring for oil for time immemorial, when Petro SA was still Suco, and I think was still subsidizing a lot of foreign companies just to explore for oil along our coast. How is it going to feature in the exploration along the west coast in that plan? And as far as transformation is concerned, I can see there under PASADA, you've got the companies, about 20 or so companies that you have taken over, or your business sponsoring as you said, it's now technically insolvent. But how far is transformation as far as hydrocarbons are concerned? How do you actually select entrepreneurs who get into the industry? The Minister of Public Enterprises, in his budget speech, he just mentioned under mineral exploration that he is thinking perhaps of supporting small miners who want to adventure into mining. How is that going to work? Or rather, how is it going to coordinate that with SADA and Department of Mineral Resources, the IGC? I just want to find out, Chairperson, what is going to be the synergy there? Because mentioned that in his budget speech, when the minister talks, we take it as sometimes as policy. And lastly, Chairperson, you're talking of the wheat bank, the seams, that is laid under AE, showing all the coal seams are they going to come into operation, starting with Flafontein base, Flafontein extension projects, T project for seam, 5 seam and the like. In the geological circles, there's a view that because that falls under the wheat bank, the coal fields. We've got the water bank coal fields when you go to the north in Limpopo. Now, the wheat bank coal fields is actually most in the geological circle. It's actually nearing its extinction because we mine it quite a lot. They're no longer good, good coal seams that they could be used for coal generation and other stuff. It's deteriorating to peat, to bituminous, to peat. And the water, the coal fields that it's not, it's got very stratified gang within it, which means it's got small seams that they've got a lot of overbedding, or they've got a lot of rock, you might call it, well, you call it gang, in it. So, how do you see the, yes, I'm a white chaplain, how do you see that exploration going forward, taking in Modupi into consideration, and this Gusile Mine that and noted commission, Chief Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mugune. Honorable Dikhali.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join Honorable Mugune and congratulate the team for a good presentation, even though it's a team of Bafana Bafana, and there is no Banyana in their team. Maybe they should explain that before they answer. And I would like to say, if there is no water, then the fish won't swim. So they are really prepared. On the, my question is based on the distribution of the solar-powered light in schools. In the rural areas, there is a serious problem of stealing, especially the solar system. I don't know how, and there are no securities. I don't know how this is going to then be taken care of after installation. And it is a good idea because now our kids cannot even try to read at schools, of which in their household there's no electricity. And the other question is from building financial sustainability. We have from slide number 12, they're going to manage, the group is planning to manage the finances, but they did not unpack on how they're going to do it, although we all agree that there's a great risk of keeping the finance sustainable. But we will need to see the group ensuring that there is financial sustainability and it meets the financial requirements and the government requirements. So I just want the group to unpack how are they going to manage it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Defali. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join and welcome the presentation. I'll be the last person to ask questions as the other people that you noted that were supposed to follow me decided to forward their questions to me so that I can represent them. So I hope you'll understand that, Chair, including Honorable Zinke, who's outside. I'll praise a fish for swimming. We highly appreciate if we see that people are equal to the task, especially including the subsidiaries of Self Chairperson. Honorable Mugune has done justice when dealing with the Vision 2020. He has covered almost all my questions. CEO, it's my question is in relation to the strategic risk. Honorable Sinclair, I've already told the chairperson that I'm representing you. You have given me your question, so I hope you are fine. CEO, it's in relation to your strategic risk. As a committee that is supposed to be doing oversight, we don't want to come here and generalize. Of course, you have given us enough information. Well, let me be upfront and indicate that I haven't gone through the details of what, because we have just picked some slides. But I want us to look at where you are dealing with the challenge, where we are saying your vacancies are being urgently filled. Try to make it in a way for us that will be able at the end of the day to do that oversight, because even if you can come in November or in 2014 and still say vacancies are being urgently filled, the statement will still be relevant. But for you to be able to unpack it and have the time frame for it is going to address part of your strategic risk, where we are dealing with this issue of leadership risk, because it's linked to that one. The second one, it's about the National Development Plan. When you look at what you have presented to us, I want to understand how is it impacting to the program structure of the group, and is it not a challenge to the current budget? How are you dealing with it? Because it has got an impact, and we're able to outline some of the other things. But beyond that, I think the justice chair on my part will be greatly done if they are going to try to deal with the detail of the questions that were linked to Vision 2020 that were raised by Honorable Ngoni. Otherwise, it was a very good presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ayers. Did you put it in writing that Honorable Nambi can represent your questions?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I can't write. I talk. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, thank you for the presentation. It's a nice group effort. My question goes around the solar heating, solar lights. I want to know how effective it is and how sustainable it is, and who will monitor it to see that it is actually being used. And then also, who is responsible for the maintenance of making sure that it works, and what is the lifespan of this project? And also on your development projects, I see that you've included 20% women. Is there any chance that the people with disability will be included in this project? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Abrams. Honorable Vanningen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the group for, I don't know who is responsible for this document, but it is a very valuable document. But I would like a little bit more. That's not giving me the little finger and then I grabbed the whole arm. But we also needed contact details with this. It would have made things even easier for us. And I want to know if this is the normal composition of the group, CEF, or and has it been like this for the last 6 months? And what changes have we seen since the last 6 months? Then, when we look at Petro SA, where are we going with the lots of money that we're investing in the rest of Africa rather, and that we've lost in the rest of Africa, rather than doing our exploration for ourselves here in South Africa, that we can bring direct revenue for ourselves? I do have, Dr. Cooper, I understand the concept of 130 million to drill one hole. But surely we have a near estimate of where we are drilling and what we are talking about. And I can understand your concerns for when you express an amount like that and the costs pertaining to drilling for oil. Somewhere along the line, somebody spoke about the landfill gas projects that will not be able to continue because of the lack of funds. Is there anybody that's working on, I don't know how one would express it, but sewer combustion gas projects? Because every municipality has a lot of it, and maybe this is a project also that we must look at. The solar water heaters, I do have compassion for the fact that the heaters came for the high pressure city town numbers and not for the rural areas. But how far are we now from reaching our targets? As commonly we often told that by the Department of Energy that we are on target and we will deliver. How far are we? And something that really bugs me is and you may probably say it's the Eastern Cape Department of Education. But there is a school 35 kilometers from Karedo and 18 kilometers from the Sir Anais Primary School. And this school is called the Nooit Gedag Primary School. And it goes across the Koga Mountains, which is like the Babians Mega Reserve. It's rough terrain, but it's on the Karedo side. And there are 30 children in that school, of which 14 of them are being transported from Karedo to the, over the 35 kilometers with two extra teachers to Nooit Gedag. But we don't have a problem with the school there. Our problem is that Eskom wants to build a 18 kilometer power line, 22 kVA, which is not going to supply any farmer in the area. It is just for the school. It's not what you would call a swear line. It's a proper power line. One could, with renewable energy, install a system, a solar energy, for 100,000 rand. But over that terrain, no EIA has been done yet, but Eskom is busy pegging the route of the power line. Now, I want to know, how do we stop things like that? Maybe it's not your terrain. Maybe we must discuss it afterwards, and maybe you should tell me what to do. But this is a horrific story, and I don't know where to go with it. And everybody, even the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape, is not answering my question. Then, when it comes to thermal energy, now people talk about thermal solar and thermal energy. Thermal energy is the hot water under the ground. And I want to know, what research have we done in South Africa for thermal energy and the steam for the generation of electricity? When it comes to the SFF, are we going to engage in bringing all those tanks at Milnerton into operation? And if so, by when? And then, are we going to concentrate only on Saldanha Bay and Milnerton? Or are we also going to consider the Kuga IDZ and perhaps the new Durban Harbour? That spreads the risk across the country and can improve a financial risk, a transport risk, and also a security risk. SASDA, you know, I am tired of government agencies not being able to deliver. And this fish is fraught. And I think we must park this fish because it's not working. I would like to know, where are we with the Namibian oil and gas and the Kudu project? Where are we going? Because everybody talks about all the African countries, and we've got to go as far as possible from South Africa. But we're not looking at Mozambique. We're not looking at Namibia. Why not? They are our immediate neighbors. Are we already involved? I recently read something about the Kudu project, but is anything happening in this regard? And then, you know, as I always say with Tastement, how far is the project down the line, and how much of the truth is balancing that situation in the press? Now, with the Mthombo project, I want to ask, where are we with that? Because I think I've recently read that China is in on the deal, and it's all very exciting, but we haven't got the supply and demand situation right in South Africa. We are at 70% production all over, so why are we insisting on this? Are we going to export? Where are the plans? Are we going to sell off? And you know, I think I'm almost at the end of this. No, I think that's all for the time being. The Yeah, I'll leave Madupi and Kusile and the coal mines for the others. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Sinclair.
Thank you, Chair. I had a number of spokespersons speaking on my behalf. The most profound one, the Honourable Nyambi, but anyway. Chair, yeah, can I start out to say that I think the CEF is instrumental in terms of many of the developmental issues of our country in the future, linked to many of the noble objectives of government in terms of the NDP and the growth path and so on. But it is also necessary that we, when debating this issue, look at the broader context of what's happening in the world. Now, there was recently a report in the Financial Times, I think middle May about, that indicated that given the new technology that's developing in America and Mexico and Canada specifically, that bloc might take over Saudi Arabia very soon as an exporter of oil. That's according to the article in the Financial Times. Now, against that context and background, I want to argue that it seems that for many reasons we're going into an abundance of energy rather than a shortfall of energy, which naturally brings us to the question about where does it leave South Africa? And I raised the issue during the debate of the Department of Energy with the Minister and so on. And I'm raising it to say that strategically it's important that South Africa for future purposes position itself in this whole debate. The one thing that bamboozles me is the South African company Sasol's approach on many of these issues, because they seem to be very keen to invest in other parts of the world, but not necessarily in our part of the world, which is South Africa. Now, that raises very specific questions in terms of what is their objectives. Are they knowing something that we don't know and that government doesn't know? Honourable Van Lingen, that the government does not want to talk about. Because in essence, the mandate of the CEF primarily rotates around the issue about the energy mix. And I didn't see anything regarding the approach in terms of nuclear energy. And I don't know, we can't sort of remove the whole debate about energy security if we don't address the issue about nuclear energy and also the potential. Now, I'm a strong proponent to say that certainly that's one of the fields that if South Africa wants to be a competitive economic country in the future, that we certainly must engage. Unfortunately, Honourable Van Lingen.
Let's grow the gas in the
Karoo. What a menace. Yeah. Now, which then brings me to the issue about the shale gas. And I always try and promote to say that as a country, we need to think strategically. But I'm not so sure that if we start engaging and start the exploration on the whole issue about shale gas that we so strategically position on that. Specifically, if we look at that slide that deals with all the exploration opportunities, I think it must be around about, I don't know, it's not numbered, but the one with South Africa and all the fine print there, yeah, that one. Specifically regarding the opportunities on the West Coast and even here, next to Mossel Bay and so on. I don't know if it's possible if we can get a better, a bigger map of that, because the fine the print is a bit fine and there's very interesting material there to read and to study if you start to look at the who's doing what in those exploration blocks and so on, which might be of interest to many people.
So the point that I want to make is I want to motivate, and I'm subjective. I'm not objective because I'm from a guru. I know that the guru is the only guru in the world. There's no other one. What I'm pleading for is that we take sensible decisions for long-term strategic survival. And with our current situation and the knowledge at hand, I think there's other options, also including the one that I think Dr. Cooper calls the next big thing, which is the renewables there in terms of your slide on page 50. Which then brings me to the issue about this long overdue solar park. So maybe fortunately today I submitted a question to the Minister of Energy on in terms of the feasibility studies of the solar park and so on. So maybe we can get greater clarity about where we stand with that, because it seems that once again the capacity of the government departments to deal with this project is certainly of great concern. And if I look at the documentation that we received, it seems that a lot of consultants will once again be used in this whole process of the feasibility of the solar park there in the Northern Cape, the first one. So, Chair, that is the sort of overall issues. Now, if I can come to a more specific issue, I went out for a moment, but I can't recall that anybody raised the issue about the matter that's been on the Mail and Guardian for, I think, the front page of the Mail and Guardian for about 2 or 3 weeks in terms of the Ghana deal and the commissions and all the wonderful things that happened there and windfalls that various attorneys had and so on. So maybe we can get some feedback about the Petro SA and the Ghana deal and what's happening there. The minister just indicated that she's driven to get to the bottom of that whole investigation, so we hope that we will get there. Yeah, then, Chair, I must say that I add my voice to the people that raised the concern about SASTA. It just seems to me that there's quite a disjuncture between industry, between SAPIA, and what's happening in SASTA. And that those two entities that are supposed to talk to each other is not actually singing out of the same hymn book on this matter. Because it's about empowerment, it's about creating opportunities for new incomers into the industry. But I'm not so sure that the various role players, including SAPIA, is coming to the party on that one. Yeah, Chair, and that's my input this morning. I would really like if we can have a greater map of that one, because I would be interested in all those fine print in terms of who's getting what with those explorations and so on. Thank you, Jay.
No, thank you, Honourable Sinclair. Honourable members, I think because of the time factor, because you still need to answer and that, and there is plenary this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Let me just have one or two questions. You know, the IEC that have been rolled out at the moment, the program, I didn't got that in your presentation, and your workings with the municipalities regarding that IECs. It's not the Independent Electoral Commission, Honourable Sinclair, but it is the integrated energy centres. We know you're preparing for an election, so also there wasn't much mention about your CSI programs in terms of community. I know, for argument's sake, that in Mossel Bay, there's a huge CSI program going in the municipality or around, but I think we should because we are dealing with provinces, you know, and we would like to find out where your CSI footprints are in the various provinces.
and what are you contributing to that. But like I said, in the interest of time, I will send my questions to you, CEO, and so that you can answer the questions of what has been put here, but all the other questions, members, give it to the secretary if you've got more questions, and they can then respond in writing to us. Over to you, CEO and the team.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The first issue that I will respond to, Chair, relates to our contribution to national supply, which we indicated is actually less than 5%, and we need to grow it to at least 25% by 2020. Our capacity in Mossel Bay, even at full production, will be less than 40,000 barrels per day in a country consuming at least 500,000 per day. So even at full capacity, it's still a very small percentage that we can produce. But then the reality is that right now we're actually producing at less than that. Why? Because of the declining indigenous feedstock from our offshore fields. That production has been declining for the last few years. In fact, even from the outset, because of the small accumulations that we have, would bring a few accumulations into production, but they would only last a few years. So we kept on investing. We are continuing in that process. The project Ikwezi, that PEPU project, is a continuation of what we've been doing in the past. We are trying to replenish the declining production, but we are now saying a different approach is necessary. Let's connect now with the gas glut that's there in the world. And up until we have a connection point, other than, of course, a pipeline, up until we have a facility to import LNG, we will continue to be disconnected from the gas resources that are being discovered left, right, and center, even those in the United States and also. But right now there is an opportunity for us to get that connection, which is why we are pursuing the LNG project. But we are also saying, even that LNG project will not give us full production. There is need for other initiatives that will then increase our presence in the downstream liquid fuels market to that 25%. That's on the 5% market share. Then there is the issue relating to downstream. I think the question there related to whether there is actually a role that the state can play. In some countries, that downstream market is actually left to the commercial players, allowing the market to take care of the market. We believe that there is a role that the state can play. Long as that role is clearly defined, long as that role is to ensure that at the end of the day, efforts are made to reduce the cost of doing business, to reduce the cost that ultimately the customer at the end, the user of our products, pays. So the state has got to play there in a very competitive manner, in a very efficient and cost-effective manner. But of course there's the role, the regulatory role, which must always be separated from that of implementation, and the good thing is that in our state, in our country right now, those roles are separated. We cannot be ref and player. Then there is the issue of Mutombo. I think the message the Honorable Member was giving was that it's important for us to expedite that project. There is clear realization that we are operating subpar, not at full capacity, the existing refineries on average are actually inefficient. So there is need to improve our efficiency, to also to improve even the level of production of local refining. And there is a need then to expedite. And the good thing now is that even our government has recognized the need to expedite that project. Project Mtombo is now one of those projects recognized as strategic infrastructure project, and it's in SIP 3. It's actually in SIP 3, and we will be benefiting from coordination by the presidential PICC, Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Committee. We will need that support. In terms of where we are, I think at some stage I will ask my colleague here, Mr. Mtombo himself, to give us some light later. But there's very good progress taking place. The technical investigations, the technical configuration is basically finalized. We now know exactly what needs to be produced in terms of the Clean Fuels 2 legislation. We now know exactly what the optimum capacity should be, and I think it's 300,000 barrels per day. Of course, taking into account the projected demand and supply capacity within the country and in the sub-region, but also taking into account the global trend towards economies of scale, also taking into account the trend in the market, the users of our own products. They want more diesel. The refinery itself is configured so that it produces more and more diesel. I think from there, maybe quickly on the shale gas, there is the fact that we've put it out there in 2020, around 2023 or something like that, is a clear realization that there is need for a lot of investigations to be carried out to find out what is it that has worked in other countries, well, especially in the United States. And right now within PetroSA, there is a lot of work that is going on. What is it that they did to create the market to ensure that best practices were used so that the environment would not be contaminated? What is it that they did in order to make sure that there was a link between production and the market, which means the infrastructure? And of course, we are taking all that, saying within the South African context, what is it that can be done? What is it that is doable? There is a lot of work that we need to do between now and the realization of the shale gas potential. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sweto. I think the other question, Chair, that came up around PetroSA was about lots of money being spent out in Africa, and why not in South Africa? I think I'd like to emphasize that we remain very strong. We remain extremely exposed and very supportive of the South Africa economy. But as an African myself, I'm very mindful that I cannot live large and live in a lap of luxury without sharing with my neighbor. So we've taken a view that we will always be supportive of other neighboring countries. That in itself, from a strong South Africa base, we can be able to uplift all of Africa and be supportive of the continent. I think there is abject poverty in South Africa. We are mindful there's abject poverty next door in Khayelitsha. But we ought to be supportive all the way into the continent as well. Can I request...
My question was, what are we investing in Mozambique in the gas field there and in Namibia with gas and oil? It has been why we are in Nigeria and Uganda and Egypt. So here I get a lecture on poverty.
Honorable Birmingham, please just contain yourself. Carry on, sir.
Thank you. Can I request then Dr. De Pontes to share some information on both SFF and PASA questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with SFF first because the questions were clear. When are we going to, and how do we plan to bring all the tanks into play in Milderton? The answer is we will be bringing a number of tanks, and we have budgeted for the refurbishing of a number of tanks, and we have the license from NOSA to do so. But these will be three or four tanks in the future. We will then look at the business case and then continue to refurbish the tanks as is commercially sensible. So I can't give a date when we'll be finished with all 39 tanks, if all 39. But certainly in the next 2 years or so, there will be a number of tanks that will be refurbished for business in Milnerton. Then the next question there was, are we only considering Saldanha Bay and Milnerton? And I think the presentation we said no, certainly not. It makes a lot of sense to look and see if we can do the strategic storage in harbours where there are the refineries, and that's obviously Durban. The question also said, what about Kucha? We are looking at Kucha. I can't get any definite answers on that, but certainly that is interesting. But we have to be mindful of the refineries that are nearby, and therefore Durban is an important issue on that side. On PASA and the maps, Chris just reminded me that the PASA website, you can access the map, but I think further than that, what we'll do is get the address of the chair, if that's possible, so we can deliver paper maps in a bigger format size so it's easier to read. If we look at those maps, we need to answer one question that came on earlier on, and the oil drilling, and what about foreign companies? If we go to the map, thanks, Chris. One back. I think we must take the advantage. Foreign companies are, in fact, coming into South Africa, putting their money in. First of all, they go through a technical cooperation permit. Then they go through an exploration license. During exploration licensing, they put in their money. They drill the holes. They decide whether those holes can be produced. If they can't be produced, unfortunately, then that database stays with the group that manages it in PASA. So we do get information. Of course, that's the worst possible information. Nobody can use it. But it is still information that we do get. And we are not using our own money to draw. I think that's important to note. And the question, in fact, said, what about the exploration along the west coast? I think we all know the EVBC gas field has indicated some possible gas. That gas is small gas fields. We look forward to those gas fields being more explored and something come from that. But certainly more people are looking also further offshore into deeper water for oil. I don't know if the chair would want me to talk about how we perceive Namibian oil and Mozambican gas. I'm happy to handle that. Namibian oil, I'll leave that to Petro Say because I think they could possibly deal with that. Namibian gas, CEF has been involved together with the DOE in binational discussions together with the Mozambican the Namibian government. The Kudu project has been for many years on the cards. It's an 800 megawatt power station. Run for approximately 18 years. That's as much gas as known there. It's been an evergreen project. Nothing has happened. However, the Namibians assure us that they are finding off-takers for the electricity. Remember that 800 megawatts is a bit too large for Namibian needs, so they need to on-sell that electricity. And then I won't go into more detail on that one, but certainly the Namibians believe they have other takers for that electricity. And that power plant is coming further to a possible project. Mozambican gas. I think very much like South Africa, nobody gave Mozambique any chance of gas around about 5 years ago. There was only the Pandetamani gas fields, of which the pipeline brings a lot of that gas into South Africa. However, fortunately for them, deep water offshore gas fields were found by American companies and Italian companies drilling, and that has given rise to a very positive future for Mozambique, whereby they will be building LNG, taking the gas, liquefying it, and taking that liquefied natural gas to the highest payers in the world. So their first projects would be supplying South Korea, Taiwan, China, and there's some other activity, and of course Japan. And that's what would happen in the first phase. But there is a huge amount of gas in Mozambique, so we have to be aware, and the CEF group is certainly working closely with the Mozambicans. I think that's all. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Dr. Tipontis. Can I request Mr. Sekakane to respond about Vlakfontein Wheat Bank versus Waterweg?
Thank you, CEO. It is true to say that the resources in Mpumalanga are certainly dwindling, but what has happened over the years is that the design of the power stations has had the foresight to design and specify technically the calorific value that is required from the coal to be a bit on the low side. It's been realized that the days of plenty are gone, and therefore CVs of 25, 24, 23, and even 20, and some would say 19, are very hard to come by. And therefore, your Medupis and your Kusiles and your Lepalales are designed such that they can take coal of a lower calorific value. That is number one. Number two, we are in Mpumalanga going back to areas that have been mined before, in areas that had oil, which are called oil bunkers previously. And we are finding that even though it's been assumed that those areas have been mined out, what was mined out was the quality coal that was required in those days. So days of plenty, people would take from 25 to 23 and they would leave anything under 23. And that coal is useful for today's designs in the power stations that Eskom is building these days. So there are ways to find even where you thought there wasn't any coal that is usable. We are finding that we can harvest some of that coal. In Limpopo, it is true to say that there are resources, although thin as they might be. But that is not really the problem with the resources in Limpopo. Two problems exist. Number one, it's infrastructure. Once you've harvested the resource, how are you going to transport it to the market? Number two, it is also ironic that they call it the water belt, but there is no water in Limpopo, which is a key resource in the mining industry. But we are encouraged by the plans that Transnet has shown us at a very high level of the rail infrastructure that is coming, and of course the Department of Water Affairs is also looking at how they can provide large resources of water which are needed for successful mining in that area. There was also a question on support for small miners. Support for small miners is available. You just have to dig deeper. And it's a collaborative effort. Companies like, or should I say, development finance institutions like the IDC have programs that are designed for small miners in all resources. Coal, platinum, and so on and so on. They go about crafting these programs by firstly defining what is a small miner. And then secondly, they design the criteria that would be used in funding those miners. For instance, it is important that they are empowered. It is important that in their employment policies there is tangible equity. It is important that the location of those businesses are in the provinces that desperately needs economic upliftment. And then the pricing of the financial resources that they need. That's on the development finance institution side. Secondly, Eskom, late last year, I think it was early December, announced a very well thought out program to support small miners. Now, Eskom, as you know, is the biggest customer of the coal resource in this country. And they are well placed in firstly providing this financial support to the small miners, and secondly providing the needed market to take up the product from the small miners. I am yet to see in the past 6 months whether what the uptake of that program is. But of course you have to qualify on various fronts. And it's very similar to what I was talking about, empowered, equity, and the size of your business. That's number two, in support for small miners. Number three is what has been giving African Exploration sleepless nights, and the group CEO of CEF is very interested that we talk and talk in earnest about this. It is what is called second tiering of the resources that we have. And I would dare say perhaps even other companies in the mineral sector. We often find that there are properties that we have that are too small to mine economically. And there is also no sizable mine next to where we are. But within the immediate community, you can find a group of women or a consortium of youngsters for whom you can rent out a few bobcats, mobile drilling machines, and 2 or 3 ton machines. They don't have to have a crusher, so they mine. The run of mine comes to us, we crush for them. They don't have to sign a contract with Eskom because we have a contract with Eskom, and through us, they can access that market. Instead of giving up the resource and taking it back to the DMR, because for your purposes, it is simply too small. Of course, we have to do it responsibly, because if we find that not only is the resource small, but the qualities are low, you can't now offload it to a group that is good. It is responsible that you have to take back. But where the qualities are good, but too small and uneconomical to mine, we will then have to find a group that is suitable, which is what we've termed second tier. Those are just some of the programs that are available for the support of small miners. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skakane. Chair, I would like to go to one or two issues around human resources. I think there was an issue around the strategic risk of vacancies that need to be filled urgently. There is a commitment insofar as the timeline is concerned of the 30th of September. There's a commitment that we have with our board to fill up 4 key vacancies at EXCO level by the 30th of September. And those vacancies are the General Manager for Clean Energy, which has been filled already, the General Manager for Human Resources, which we have advertised out, and it's we are in the interview stages for that, the Chief Financial Officer, as well as the Chief Audit Executives. 4 key EXCO vacancies, we are on track to fill them by the 30th of September, and we've contracted with the board that we must deliver that. And also there was a question from the Honourable Member around Bafana Bafana. Two of those, the commitment is that 2 of those must be filled by female candidates. Even the group that is here is not so well represented insofar as the gender issues are concerned. But I also wanted to take you back to slide number 4, Chair, to say if I deliver to you today a full-strength team. Unfortunately, some of our female business operators have got commitments today, and this meeting had to go on in respect of just the inconvenience you may cause again. From a clean energy division, that business is run by Dr. Pindile Masangane. She's a black female. Unfortunately, she's not here because of prior commitments. From a Petro SA point of view, that business is run by Ms. Nosizwe Makamo, a black female who is not here either. And PASA, the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, is run by Nonsikelelo van Averbeke, who's currently dealing with the issues that are at DOE, albeit she's in an acting capacity at that business. So we could have, Chair, presented a much balanced team insofar as gender issues are concerned if we're able to present the full strength of our team and showcase that we are as diverse. Can never be enough. There's a clear 50-50 agenda as well in the group, and we'll continue to ensure that. That is why the next vacancies are targeted at 50-50 between male and female candidates. To demonstrate that, we do have one question around financial sustainability that we'd like to take, which is the next question, and we'll showcase that gender does prevail within the group. And our acting CFO will respond to that question.
Honorable members, in attempt to address the members' question around financial sustainability and how exactly the CEF group will achieve that, I think when we're speaking of financial sustainability, I can broadly address it in four key items, that being looking at the group revenues generated. Further down the line, we could look at how we'll contain our spending in terms of group overall expenditures. Then we can classify it further into how to maximize our cash reserves. And last but not least, it would be how we manage and monitor on risks that affect the group that could have key financial implications if not adequately addressed. So when we look at the group revenues, with the group plans presented in front of you, the group continues and is dedicated to explore on activities and investments that will yield recognizable revenues for the group, and that has to be achieved on a continuous basis and not just once off, and that is clearly highlighted in the group plans that are presented for the next 5 years. Furthermore, the group is dedicated to ensure that the achievement of the above point is further enhanced by improving our systems of controls and oversight over project appraisals and monitoring before approval and commitment of large CAPEX expenditure is made. Also, increased monitoring over investments already made through various forums that have been established and some are still in the process of being concluded on group-wide, that will ensure full returns are obtained from whatever investments that the group plans to make. I think that will sum up just how we plan to continue to generate revenues as a group and how we'll aim to monitor that. When we look at our bottom line, with expenditure, we have committed as a group to cost containment by adopting a more aligned group structure, which will help eliminate duplication of cost centers, and this can be achieved through the establishment of group support functions. We'll further going to look at increased oversight from the holding company, and that will ensure that even the subsidiaries, with the commitments that they've made in their corporate plans, that they are able to achieve the set cost reduction targets that they have committed with their shareholder, being CEF, that they will achieve in the next 5 years. Increased reporting, that being monthly and quarterly, on progress on spend, which has been made, which has been implemented, will help better promote transparency and accountability group-wide. And also this will help the DOE in ensuring that CEF Group delivers on its mandate. Thirdly, if we look at the cash reserves that we as CEF Group currently have, we continue to monitor those to increase our returns on these reserve funds that we have, obviously within the legislated limits to obtain maximum returns on those cash funds until such time that we're able to use them for the planned projected spend that has been included in our corporate plans. And that is done through our in-house treasury departments housed within PetroSA and another one in CEF House in Centrum. And then with our increased management strategy, we aim to formulate a group risk oversight function. And this function will mainly manage and monitor key risks affecting the group, which in the nature of our current operating environment could have significant financial implications if not addressed adequately at the appropriate level. So this function is quite key, and I think it's a very good initiative from the group in terms of our success in implementing it. Then lastly, wanted to add that with the messages going around the group, we are continuously reevaluating with the aim to improve on our procurement processes to ensure, first of all, compliance with our legislative environment, and secondly, to ensure that the best prices are obtained for whatever work it is that we wish to procure, and thirdly, to place more focus on quality on the work to be delivered. I think this will further make our available funds go an extra mile in achieving our key objectives without any duplication of resources financially. And I think with that plan, the group will be well on its way to achieve the promised financial sustainability. I hope I've answered the members' answer.
Thank you, Ms. Dick. Chair, we'll then go to the CSI and the IEC question, and then we'll go back to more technical questions on solar water heaters and solar pumps and nuclear and thermal. I'll ask Ms. Mabato Matiwane to respond to this, both the CSI question and the...
Honourable members, there are a number of questions that are kind of sitting around which I've been asked to look at. Solar water heaters, in many ways your question on targets needs to be answered by the department and not by us, because we're not doing all of them. I understand that at this stage it's somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 that have been delivered, so we're about halfway to the ultimate target. You asked a question on the high pressure. The question was slightly different. If I've got it here. So that million is total, whether it's high pressure or low pressure, so it's, that's the whole lot. So we were focusing on high pressure. We're looking at whether we can get into the low pressure. You asked a question about thermal energy. I think you meant geothermal energy versus solar thermal. Okay, thermal is simply heat. That's what it is. Geothermal does require a fairly high temperature underground, so it's typically done near areas where you have volcanic activity. South Africa, I seem to recall an article a few years ago that our sites are minimal, so geothermal is not likely to work in South Africa. You do need fairly high temperatures because you do need to boil the water so that you can create steam, so that you can turn steam turbines. The other one is solar thermal. Obviously, that is heat from the sun. And it can be done in two ways, the flat plates, the solar water heaters, which is low temperature, and then using concentrating technologies, either parabolic trough or mirrors with a central receiver, you can do concentrated solar power, which is high temperature. With that, you can generate electricity using a thermal cycle as opposed to an electronic cycle using photovoltaics. You asked a question, I think it was on landfill gas. Landfill gas is relatively small sites, and the challenge with those is they need to be properly prepared, they need to be properly capped, and they actually need to have the right composition. If it's a landfill site with building rubble, it's not going to give you any gas that you can use. If it's a site with a lot of organic matter, dead dogs and things like that, then you get a lot of methane, and you can use that to either as a heat source or to generate electricity. But they're relatively small. We're talking 1-2 kilowatts, maybe 3 or 4 in very special cases. The ultimate sewage works, yes, we are aware of that. Sanyedi was doing some research on that area. Again, it's relatively small in scale, okay, and we need to appreciate that. But yes, it is a source of methane that's 21 times more potent than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. I'd like to know the size of this nuclear school. I think your numbers are wrong. 22 kV line is enough to probably feed half Port Elizabeth. not just to screen 30 kids. Okay. I like that area quite a lot, and I'd actually like to know where it is. And then perhaps towards the end of the year, I'll take a ride through and find this school and see what you can do. Solar powered lights, I think, also comes into this game, and there were questions on solar powered lights. The ones that we're talking about are small lights, desk lights. Okay, the panel is probably an A5 size, so half of an A4, that you can stick on the roof or stick in the sun, plug your light in and charge it at night, and you've got probably four to 5 hours of study time on a full charge. In terms of theft, I guess young guys can still steal it. They are small. But I believe that for school kids, they actually two lessons. One is that they can learn at night, they've got lights to learn at night, but secondly, they learn about technology and renewable energy technology. And that, in fact, is what we're trying to do through the one program where we are handing those out. I think I did mention that we've got the solar light project. There's some schools in KwaZulu that we are delivering them to, and there's also a school in Prescott. That particular one is tied into the solar park, which I'll get back to as well. But we're talking here about small stuff, it's not big stuff. The solar park, there was a little challenges about unfettered access to the land at Uppington, which delayed the process and the project significantly. We now have unfettered access to land at Prisca, and that forms part of the whole solar park initiative. We heard, was it a week or so ago, in fact, that the Uppington site had now been cleared up, all of the challenges around that, and so Uppington also being included. Remember that the solar park concept is not just one site. It's a potential for 5 gigawatts of solar. Now 5 gigawatts is quite a lot of power, okay? From that whole area. And the idea is that there will be a number of fairly large generating units, if I can call them that, individual parks. What we have already completed is the geotechnical feasibility for the Prisca site. The environmental impact assessment for the Prisca site has started, remembering that the EIA takes time, okay, it's not instantly. And then there's the overarching feasibility study, which is also going to look at how do we get the electricity out from that area. I don't even think you've got a 22 kV line into there, let alone what you really need to take 5 gigawatts out. And it's also going to be fairly spread out. So that feasibility study is more than just, okay, let's put up a few panels here and there. Okay, it's far more than that. The target for the overarching feasibility and for the geotechnical is the end of September, if I'm not mistaken, but it's this year. We're getting there. The EIA will only be completed probably first half of next financial year, simply because of the process that needs to be followed. We are now adding the Uppington site, and there will be specific feasibility done on that, which will be the geotechnical and the EIA for that. So yes, hopefully we will make some progress on the solar park. Just a nuclear is not the ambit of CEF. We need to understand that CEF was primarily focused on oil, gas and coal, and on renewable energies. ISCOM is the electricity utility providing us with electricity, that's their ambit, and NEXA and that part of the game looks at nuclear. CEF does not look at nuclear. However, yes, you are correct in that we need to look at the whole picture and understand that there are more options than just what we are doing. You spoke about America becoming the next Saudi Arabia. Possible, except that most of that oil is tight oil, which is expensive oil. If the price of crude in, and this is now West Texas Intermediate, drops below about $80 a barrel, there's about a $15 spread between WTI and Brent at the moment. If it drops below about $80, it's not economical for them to extract that oil with current technology. technologies. We must understand that that is also hydraulic fracturing, although there are some new techniques, the octopus technique, for example, which allows you to hit a bigger area with a pad. Have a look at Google Earth, go to Williston in North Dakota, zoom in there, and you will see what the Karoo could look like. There's a pad every mile. Okay? With the octopus technique, it may be spread out 2 miles between them. Landfill gas, I think I've done another one that I've missed. Solar, LDP. I hope that I've answered all of those the sort of loose technical questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper. Thank you, Chair. We can perhaps now go to Ms. Matiwane to talk to us about CSI and integrated initiatives. Thank you.
Thank you, the CEO. I think just to say that one of the strongest programs that we have currently within the group, and particularly located at Petro SA, is the CSI project. It's a very strong project. We all the targets that we set have been met. Fortunately, the focus of those projects are not only located within the Western Cape. There is a fair national spread. You have some of the projects in Bloemfontein, you have some of the projects in Limpopo, you have some of the projects in the Eastern Cape, you have some of the projects in the Western Cape and the Southern Cape, if I have to be exact. The province that we are currently going to be looking at is KZN in the few months. There are plans to go to KZN. Most of of our CSI projects are mainly educational and health-wise. Educational because as Petro SA we want to focus mainly around skills development, particularly in science and math and engineering. So hence education is a priority to us. The other focus that we've just introduced at Petro SA in terms of the CSI is mainly economic development because we want to upgrade the social investment that we've already done to economic investment because we've also realized that there is a potential of turning some of the projects that we're already involved in to become social and economic enterprises. The IEC project that is currently located in Bizana, we are trying to facilitate some training around the cooperative that is there and the beneficiaries and try to bring the commercial value of that project. And we are currently talking to the municipality around the type of training that should go into that. And as I'm saying, the focus should be to derive economic value from those social and economic initiatives that we are setting. One of the other initiatives that we've currently had to look at is in light of the challenge that is faced by SASTA, has been the supplier development. In hindsight of the current changing legislation of your Black Economic BBBE legislation, what we have done, we've come up with a revised framework which we refer to as the Enterprise and Supplier Development Project because we are aware of the fact that currently you only have small portion of black players in this industry. It's an expensive industry. It's technically challenging in terms of the skills that are demanded by whoever wants to play in that. Hence the need for us to say that we need to also focus around encouraging and arming the entrepreneurs to get into the industry. So the enterprise development aspect will focus around that, which will focus on imparting just your basic business skills, how to start your business, how the industry operates, how the administrative requirements operate, particularly in the oil and industries, your environmental and sustainability issues, which are very, very critical in terms of safety. The supplier development project is focusing on those enterprises that are already operating in the oil and gas industry. We just recently had a workshop, I think last week in Mossel Bay, to look into those enterprises that are already supplying some services to Petro SA, but also outside Petro SA, because we are aware that if the industry has to grow, possibly Petro SA has been given the money to champion transformation, and together with SASDA, that is, those are the projects that we're looking at in terms of making sure that we capacitate the entrepreneurs, particularly the suppliers, to be able to deliver effective services. The issue of finance and the issue of skills is going to be a big issue. And currently we are also looking at our budget in terms of seeing how we can fund some of these initiatives. We are also looking at how we can also use some of our key capital projects to provide space for a training ground for some of these suppliers in terms of rendering their services. So I think that is all. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know how we're doing with time, but I'm about to take maybe the last three questions and we are up.
We've got 5 minutes for that. Do you think you can do it in, let's say, 7 minutes?
Thank you, Chair.
Because some members have got meetings at 1 o'clock.
Thank you. Perhaps the last issue is around people with disability. We don't have focused programs as such, but we have a fair representation within the group, and we are mindful of the need for us to have focused engagement and focused programs around people with disabilities. It can never be enough. Insofar as the funding for the NDP programs, that will always be a challenge. We rely quite extensively on self-funding. Fortunately, we are an organization that has never been to Parliament to request for funding. And how we run the group now is to ensure that we continue along that path and ensure that the cash that we have is well preserved, so we can use that cash as well as the returns that we generate from the entities to fund a lot of the NDP-related programs. Sasol, we must note that Sasol was born out of SEF. You know, no matter how great they can be as an organization, they were born out of these four walls. They are very strong in South Africa, and I would say that without playing down how strong Petro SA, for example, in South Africa is, but Sasol has achieved a very high degree of dominance that if they were to continue to invest in South Africa, they may just create a monopoly of sorts. So them investing external out of South Africa, they would say their shareholders, it's really about diversifying, but they are relatively strong, and we take pride in the fact that they came out of debates like this from parliamentary committees. SASDA, a very, very ailing organization. I think insofar as the selection is concerned, we would normally select individuals with basic skills, individuals who do have a basic concept, who are showing a lot of potential for growth, and will then support their programs. Obviously, potential for growth, potential to source business, and potential to employ more people and spread the cake to far greater South Africans. And last but not least, Chair, the issue of the mail and guardian. It is actually not the issue of the mail and guardian. It's an issue that our own minister raised with the Central Energy Fund and requested the Central Energy Fund to conduct investigations into the affairs of its entities. It's the commitment of the minister in the era of clean governance. It's the commitment of the minister to ensure compliance with the PFMA, to ensure compliance with the laws of this country, including anti-corruption. The minister has not gone out to publish a paper, so the Maiden Guardian has latched onto that and communicated with the broader public. The minister's report came out on the 28th of April. She's busy applying her mind on the report. She's currently studying the report, probably without making commitments on behalf of the minister. It shouldn't be more than 2 weeks
where she can go back and communicate on the next steps that, you know, she will take insofar as this matter is concerned. It could be legal issues, you know, related into this report. It could be civil issues. But we ought to be mindful and be very sensitive that where there are allegations like that that come through the report, the minister must make 100% sure that the reputation of those people that are implicated are preserved until it is very, very clear that these things need to be deliberated out there. So I think the minister has done quite a great job in claiming high ground and initiating such a very difficult task in investigating the affairs of the subsidiaries under her watch and ensure that there is clean governance and we root out corruption in past details. I thank you, Chair, once again for your time, and I thank all the members for the indulgence, and really is much appreciated sincerely from all of us.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honourable members, if there is any unclarity or questions on that, please forward it to the Secretary so that she can forward it to the CEO, to Seth, or to Petroza, for that to be answered. On behalf of the committee, let me thank CEO and your team, also Petroza and your team, the department, everybody that's around here, ESCOM, for the meeting today. I think it was a very, very good meeting. The CFO looks relaxed now. The CFO looks relaxed. To the members as well, thank you very much for the meeting. I think we need to have a follow-up meeting because I'm very much interested in the transformation in the industry. It's a worrying factor, especially to what the Honourable, to what the good lady has said, that in terms of the entry market, specifically for historically disadvantaged people, you know, there seems to be gatekeepers to block them to enter the market. And I think we would definitely like to have a meeting with yourselves, I think Sophia and also the department in that, in terms of going forward, not just in the liquid fire, in the liquid industry, but also in the, not just only on the oil and the LNG, the oil and gas industry, but also in the energy industry. There is a total blockage for HDA companies and people to get into there. But that's room for another meeting. We will definitely share with you guys. But also there's an outstanding oversight which some of the members has requested that we go and visit your platform, I think off the coast of Mossel Bay. And that's, so that is still something that we owe our members that. So we will definitely in due time give you a call, CEO, and engage on that issues and how we can do that. I will give you reasonable time, enough time, so that we can conduct and also not catch you off guard, because we believe there is some safety issues when we go on to the drilling machine. I think in the next life, Honorable Abrams would love to become a drill operator in that regard. CEO, anything from your side, sir?
Nothing, Chair. Much obliged. We can also invite you to the Saldanha Storage Tanks. Very good site. Thank you.
Oh, well, that's good, because there is some members that doesn't know where Saldanha is in the West. we'll take that opportunity. But then, members, I think we've come to the end of the meeting once again. Please accept our appreciation and thanks for attending and for briefing us on very critical issues, you know. And I hope that this is not the last engagement before, you know, we, all of us sitting on this side of the room, our minds are election. Election, election, election. So if you get any calls from anyone, you must know, it's election campaign. They're trying to do you. Even if they give business cards, even if they give what, Dr. Cooper was disturbed while he was speaking, giving a business card, it's election campaign. So, but don't don the t-shirts when you come and brief the communities with the elections, Dr. Cooper. On that regard, members, thank you very much. And remember, we've got plenary at 2 o'clock. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Members, we also want to thank Chef. We also want to thank Chef for the notebooks, but there's still some outstanding gifts from Petrosa that we are waiting for.
No, I can get it. Well, I'll put this thing in the back there.